Welcome. My name is Kevin Gianni, host and creator of The Rockathon, which can be found at www.rockathon.com. That's RAWKATHON.com. I'm going to be your host for this incredible Rockathon interview. Each one of these interviews is special to me because I feel the experts and I really broke down the impersonal walls of being on stage or in public, and we got to their true essence. I can promise that the content you find in these talks are not what you'll find anywhere else, unless you actually sat down with the experts themselves, one-on-one, and asked them your questions. So please grab a pen and piece of paper, get a filtered glass of water, and be prepared to experience the Rockathon firsthand. Please enjoy the show. So, Dr. Doug Graham, I want to welcome you.
Thanks, it's a pleasure. Truly a pleasure.
For those people who may not exactly know who you are, which are probably very few, why don't you just give a brief introduction of who you are, and then we'll go from there.
I'm Dr. Doug Graham. I'm Doug Graham, basically. I've been a health enthusiast now for 40 years. Not by choice at first, but I was standing on a jetty on the beach one day. I was 16, and the concept of health hit me so strong that I couldn't deny it. I tried. I tried to ignore it. I stayed on that jetty for an hour. And I'm not saying God talked to me or anything like that, but I just couldn't get the concept out of my head that health needed to be my pursuit. I'd already made the decision to pursue some type of medicine, which eventually became chiropractic medicine, and then eventually got my doctorate as a hygienist as well, as a professional hygienist. And so I'm a doctor of health and a doctor of chiropractic medicine. I got my undergraduate in sports science, physical education, and health and nutrition. I worked as a gymnast for many, many years, both high school and college, teaching gymnastics, and then afterwards as a professional coach in gymnastics and trampoline. I coached a bunch of national champions in trampoline. And since I've gotten out of chiropractic college in 1983, I have worked helping people regain their health. I'm not really paying that much attention to chiropractic, although I did have a private practice for 20 years. I've continued my education in terms of nutrition, which has interested me since seventh grade, when my health teacher in seventh grade just caught my notice. I don't really know why he did, but he did. And ever since that time, I've just been pursuing nutrition. So by college, I'd gone vegetarian, and shortly after college, went vegan. While I was still in my mid-20s, switched over to what would today be considered a raw diet. We didn't really have that name for it at the time. But by the time I was 30, I was already looking at being an all-raw vegan and talk to all the leaders about how to do that, all five of them, and pursued them, and they said, well, we don't know anything about being a vegan athlete. We know how to help sick people get well. And I go, yeah, I understand how to do that too. Restrict their calorie intake and give them lots of rest and sick people get well. But how do we get athletes to improve their performance? And I asked around, and eventually the only congruent answer I got, and the only consistent answer I got, was raw food, raw food, raw food. Look to raw food, you'll see an improvement in athletic performance. I pursued the sports science behind that, discovered what were the presiding principles, and started applying nutrition and sports science to the raw vegan diet, ending up at 80-10-10 in 1986, but not coining the phrase really until almost 15 years later. It was in between that time that I started to develop the terminology and application and explanation so that I could make it a clear enough program that people could understand why does this specific application of the raw food diet works so well for little old ladies, world-class athletes, people trying to regain their health, people with every health condition, people who are already healthy but want to feel better. Why does it work at any caloric intake? And essentially because it's a species-specific diet. It works for our species. And then just how to apply that uniquely and individually to each person, because we all have specific preferences. So it's been a growth process, mm-hmm. totally a growth process, a learning process. I've enjoyed working with the sickest of the sick and the wellest of the well, the fittest of the fit, and helping them improve themselves. Essentially what I do is help people improve their health so that they can do whatever else they do at a higher level.
So let's start. There's a lot to cover here. I want to start with kind of your learning path. Who did you learn most from? And you also mentioned off camera before, you said that the raw food movement is far from new. It was actually fairly bigger than it is now. And so explain that and explain who you learned from and then how you kind of synthesized, you know, what you learned into what you have now.
That's a good question. I believe in mentoring. I have sat at the feet of some of the great teachers in the world of health, hygiene, sports science. I've been fortunate to have good teachers, certainly in the raw food movement as well. I count all the leaders as my friends and learn as much from each of them as I possibly can. But I'm also quite willing to go back in history and read. I was raised with the gift of being an avid reader and a fairly rapid reader. So I can cover a lot of ground. And so I've gone back as far as writing allows in terms of science of raw foods, philosophy of raw foods, and the art of raw foods. And I would count all of the early authors as at least teachers to some degree. I sat at the feet of Dr. Keki Sidwa for quite a long time. And had him explain to me some of the history of the raw movement. He's been involved for now almost 60 years, very quietly over in England, and certainly listened to a tremendous amount of great influences, Dr. Vivian Virginia Vetrano, whose specialty is cellular physiology, but also a raw fooder since age 20, now approaching 80, and count her as a good friend. But I've studied as much as I can, really, over the years, and just keep reading and just keep learning and enjoy the fact that the insights keep coming. Mm. Yes, the raw movement was much bigger 100 years ago than it is today. It came and went in a flash when the word germs were introduced. And the medical people managed to scare the populace away from raw foods. They cook everything. Cook your tomatoes before you eat them. Cook your apples before you eat them. Germs. And it's interesting that people would fall for such a thing when they know full well that you would never, ever, ever eat a tomato that was bad if it was raw. You can sense it. You touch it and it feels wrong, and then you smell it and it smells bad, and if it gets past those clues, you look at it before you eat it, hopefully, and you see that it's off in color or texture or something. But if it even gets past all that, you know, and you put it in your mouth, you spit it right out and go, oh, that's bad. But if you cook a tomato and put that bad tomato into a tomato sauce and put it on top of something else, you're very likely going to eat bad food, and this is where you come into the expression, it must have been something I ate. Whereas when you're eating whole, fresh, ripe, raw, organic plants, simply, exactly as it came in off the tree or the bush or the vine, bad food doesn't get past all those initial clues. So you don't really need to have that same concern about germs that you would when you're cooking food. Cooking food allows you to take bad food and present it as if it was good.
And when you, let me start with this. We'll just get into it right away. 80-10-10 is different than a lot of what people have heard of if they haven't been introduced to raw through you.
No question.
So
a lot of people have a misunderstanding of what 80-10-10 is.
So let's
what I think you just said.
Let's explain it.
80-10-10 is incredibly simple. In fact, I was just working on this again last night. 80-10-10 is amazingly simple to describe. First of all, it's a caloronutrient ratio. There's only three foods that provide us with calories, or three nutrients that provide us with calories: protein, fat, and carbohydrates. Those are the only three. Although there are advertisers who would have you believe that alcohol is not part of the carbohydrate group, and so they can tell you that their beer has no carbohydrates. It's not true. Alcohol is a type of carbohydrate. Anyway, there's only proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. And the sports scientists, the health scientists, the longest study ever done on human health, the largest study ever done on human health, those two and literally thousands of others have continuously guided us towards certain understandings about how much protein, how much fat, and how much carbohydrate we are designed to thrive on. As human beings, we can survive on practically anything. We can survive for a fairly long time in a dungeon on bread and water, but it is not thriving. And if we want to hit at our fullest, for instance, if you're not well, you're looking to stack all the lifestyle cards in your favor. If you're really well and competitive, you're looking to stack all the lifestyle cards in your favor, including those of nutrition. If we're trying to reach our absolute best, then science has already told us why and where that will happen in terms of how much protein, how much fat, how much carbohydrates. And what they've come up with is that we require between 3 to 9% of our calories from protein. That if we go below 3%, we're likely going to run into problems eventually. But there are no foods that offer less than 3%. There are no whole foods that offer less than that. Certainly rock candy offers no protein, you know. But, or olive oil offers no protein, but there are no whole foods, nothing that grows or lives, that goes under 4%, I don't believe, in terms of its total caloric value. And so 3 to 9 is easy to hit. In fact, most fruits fall between 4 and 9, although a few go to 10, 11, 12. And most vegetables are in the low teens to mid-teens, although a few are higher. They also suggest to us that too much protein is equally, if not more, of a problem as not enough protein. With the understanding, which is one of the huge ones, one of the big misunderstandings in nutrition, is that more is better. We fall for it over and over and over and over, even after we're patting ourselves on the back for having gotten it. We still fall for the misunderstanding that more is better. We know more sunlight is not better. You can get too much, and that sunlight is a nutrient. And then we go right back and go, more vitamin A, that's better, or more omega-3, that's better. And it's not the case. We're always invariably optimum nutrition defined as the consumption of foods whose nutrient content most closely mimics our nutrient needs. Those are the foods that are easiest to digest. Those are the foods that are most appealing to our senses, to our emotions, to our ethics. And those are the foods that invariably provide us with the ideal levels of health and nutrition. Foods whose nutrient content most closely mimic our nutrient needs. And so 3 to 9% in terms of protein is what Framingham study, China study, McDougall, Ornish, Howell, all of the credible almost all of the non-credible people in the world of nutrition say 3 to 9% in terms of our protein intake. Interestingly, when they study fat intake, they've come up with similar conclusions for different reasons, but similar conclusions. And they found that when fat intake goes beyond 3 to 9% of calories, the predictable health decline ensues. It'll be different for different people depending upon their genetic background and their strengths and weaknesses in terms of their lifestyle, but when you go beyond 10% of calories from fat, predictable health decline invariably is accompanied. And so for some people we'll see that as the development of heart disease, some people as candida, some people chronic fatigue, some people it's diabetes, some people it's cancer, some people it's just digestive disorders. But those are basically the big six, and everybody according to modern medicine, has three or four of those at least. Modern medicine says 97% of America has heart disease, but only two-thirds die of heart disease because the other third die of cancer. They say that we have over 90% of Americans have cancer, but only a third die of cancer because the others all die of heart disease first. That, as well as that, that currently almost half of America has diabetes or pre-diabetic tendencies, and in order for it to get to 100% by 2050, all we have to do is keep doing what we're doing, and all Americans will be diabetic. These are statistics that are a little spooky when we know that on the standard American diet, we're eating 40% of our calories from fat with recommendations of 10%. The sports scientists tell us some rather more telling information, I think. They explain very clearly that when your fat intake goes beyond 10%, that your ability to uptake, transport, and deliver oxygen to your cells goes down. Uptake, transport, and deliver. So if you have emphysema, you can't uptake as well if you're eating more than 10% of your calories from fat. If you have cancer, you can't transport oxygen to the necessary tissues as well as if you lower fat intake. If you're trying to be athletic, you can't deliver oxygen to your muscles as well if your fat intake goes beyond 10%. So once again, the numbers are identical, and the authorities have come up with the same numbers, and they're recommending 3 to 9% of calories from fat as a ratio of your total caloric intake for the day. Wonderful thing is, if we take all of the various fruits and vegetables, mix them in a bag and pull out any 5 or 10, chuck them in a blender and do a nutritional assay, you're going to come up with 3 to 9% of calories from fat. It's almost as if we were defining the species-specific diet by their caloric-nutrient ratio. A lot of people do nutrition by the micronutrients. They worry about every single individual little thing. This is the tail wagging the dog. They're not paying attention to the macronutrients, protein, fat, and carbohydrates. And it turns out that if you get your macronutrient ratio correct, all the other micronutrient ratios will fall into place on a raw vegan diet. On a vegan diet, you'll still experience some problems. It's great for heart disease, but not so great for other conditions. And so the cooked vegan diet doesn't hold a candle to the raw vegan diet in a wide variety of ways that we won't even begin to go into here. Mm-hmm. By the time we define human parameters of protein intake at 3 to 9 for fat and 3 to 9 for protein, we're left with only one option for the carbohydrate intake, and that is that it must be more than 80. This is how 80-10-10 came into being. It was the idea that we're looking for a caloric-nutrient ratio where carbohydrates make up a minimum of 80% of your calories on average, and protein and fat make up a maximum of 10% each. So it's not a number we're trying to hit. It's numbers that we're using. We don't want to hit them, in fact. I want to be above 80, below 10, below 10. Mm-hmm. Those are the red lines.
Right. And with the 80-10-10, it's not kind of like a taking notes and making sure that you hit 80-10-10 every day.
You don't
day.
Have to take any notes.
Yeah. It's
I've done all the math.
Yeah.
The math comes out to meet the science. It's rather nice. All you have to do is eat fruits and vegetables. But that's where the misconception comes in, because most people see me eating more fruit than they do. They put the focus on the fruit and they go, oh, it's a fruitarian approach. It's not. It's a frugivorous approach. Fruit predominates my diet in terms of caloric consumption. Vegetables predominate my diet in terms of volume, but we don't measure our food intake in terms of volume. It's not a realistic way. The average guy eats 1 million calories a year. He never has to do any math. The average American eats 1 million calories a year without ever doing math. We just eat according to our hunger and requirements and just fill up that satiation need. And if you're off by a half of 1%, you're gaining weight or losing weight every year noticeably. So we hit that million for guys, and ladies about 750,000 on average, without ever doing any math. You don't have to figure stuff out. Basically, you have to know that if you're not eating fruits and vegetables, you're doing so for reasons other than nutrition and health. And there's lots of other reasons to eat. I recognize that. I like to eat for nutrition and health as my predominant reasons, and then all the other reasons in alignment with that. So rather than be incongruous and say, well, I'm going to have a party tonight, and so I'm going to order out Domino's pizza, I'm going to say, I'm going to have a party tonight, we're going to eat mangoes. Or, in other words, I'm going to eat the foods that I love, that love me back as much as I love them. And that just is a matter of developing a mindset, like any change, like becoming fit, or getting enough sleep, or having emotional poise, or having a positive mental attitude. It takes a little practice to grow, but then it becomes who you are. So eating healthfully for me is effortless. It's much easier than being sick. And I find that's really hard to do. So it's not about good or bad, right or wrong, but there's always consequences to everything we do. Right. This became so easy, 80-10-10 became so easy when I just realized if it has a label, I probably don't need to be eating it. If it comes in a bottle bag, can, or box, it's not really food for me. If it's whole, fresh, ripe, raw, organic plants, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
It's really simple, and it's easy to describe. You eat all the fruit you care for, and follow it with all the vegetables you want.
Simple as that.
The 80-10-10. Eat all the fruit you care for, follow it with all the vegetables you want. If you're having any of the following four cravings, you're not eating enough fruit. If you're looking around at the end of a meal for something sweet, mm-hmm. If you're looking around at the end of a meal for something really heavy and filling, if you're looking for refined sugars, concentrated sweets in between meals, candy, alcohol, chocolate, dried fruit, these are all refined, concentrated sweets. Or if complex carbohydrates ever call your name, if you're thinking complex carbohydrates are food rather than primary school paste that they always are, right? I mean, paste is water and flour.
Yeah.
And if you add eggs and sugar, it's still pastry. It's still paste with water, you know, with eggs and sugar added. It's still paste. And if paste is starting to appear to you as if it was food, what it's telling you is you haven't been getting enough carbohydrates from fruit, and so you start craving those complex carbohydrates to fill the gap. 80-10-10 makes sense as a species-specific diet. It got us to the 20th century. It's how the world's best runners eat, the Ethiopian runners and the Kenyan runners. It's how the world's longest-lived people live all around the country and all around the world. When you go to the pockets of long-lived people, we'll see invariably that they're eating not by choice 80-10-10, but because that's what nature imposed upon them. They tend to live in isolated areas, and we find them and then see that they're eating what's imposed upon them by nature. What's imposed upon us by nature is eating fruits and vegetables. We can sneak up on them. They're easy to spot. They taste good, and so we go back. The trees are rich with food source. You don't get hurt sneaking up on a raspberry. It's hard. I mean, if you tried to corner a squirrel, he'd probably tear you to shreds. You know. So it's and that's how it is for every creature. It's easy to access the food. It's a little spooky in the raw food movement because most people on raw food are eating 10-10-80.
Right.
When you eat 10-10-80, you don't feel like it's working for you. At that point, that's when you become vulnerable to looking for more of something's missing, something's not right. And that's where condiments and stimulants and irritants and supplements and superfoods and all the gimmicks and gadgets start to, you're just looking. And that's why in today's world, it's really great with the media that the raw food movement is growing faster than it's ever grown in history. Unfortunately, at the same time, because people are eating 10-10-80, which is the species non-specific diet, there's more people dropping out of the raw food movement than ever before in history. And so we see a tremendous number of people coming in, but just as many going out. We don't see the maximum growth that should be happening. It should be like we're telling people, hey, this is the greatest diet ever. Just try it. I mean, if you tried the greatest car ever, would you want your old car back?
Yeah.
You know, if you tried the greatest shoe ever, would you want your old shoe back? And if you try the greatest diet ever, why do people go back? It's because they're doing 10-10-80. They're eating 10 times and more what is being recommended by sports science and health science. We're thumbing our nose, and the leaders of the movement are thumbing their nose at the science behind nutrition in order, for whatever the purpose, they're not applying what we know works. And in the same way, we're doing the same thing with the rest of our nutrition. So although we understand that in America, the average American is eating typically between 5 to 10 times as much salt as what is healthfully recommended, the average raw fooder is eating twice as much salt as the average American. And we're paying a serious price for it.
So this is a species-specific diet.
Every species has one.
So what if the species is not moving enough? It's a high-carbohydrate diet. What if the energy is not being burned off?
The number of calories that an inactive person eats is typically fewer than or less calories than a person who's highly active. This can work for them or against them in various ways. If you are a sedentary person, a non-muscled person, your caloric requirements are very low. If you eat simply to meet your caloric requirements on 80-10-10 or any other diet, what you're not going to meet is your requirements for specific nutrients. Our specific nutrient content requirements is set up based on the concept that humans will be active, must be active, in order to go get their food. We have to climb a wall, we have to climb a tree, we have to walk a couple miles to get to the next tree, we have to be on the move. We are designed as a transient species. We live in an area, we strip the tree, we move on, we foul the water, we move on, we don't come back for a year, by then everything's repaired itself. But we are designed to be fit, as are all creatures designed to be fit. And when we are sedentary, we will eat fewer calories, hence taking in less zinc or less whatever less calcium. We'll take in less of everything on a ratio of calories consumed. If we eat strictly according to our caloric needs, then we won't get enough of specific nutrients. If we eat strictly according to our nutrient needs, then we'll take in too many calories and we'll constantly gain weight and we'll bump into other health problems due to the obesity that ensues. The problem at the other end, however, is also there and very obvious when we see that world-class athletes especially are eating 3, 4, and 5 times as much food as the average person. We hear about, the Armstrongs and the Phelps and the people like that eating 12 and 14,000 calories per day. Well, if they're eating 12 or 14,000 calories of really nutritious food, that's great. But if they're eating 12 or 14,000 calories of junk, full of carcinogens, full of mutagens, full of toxic chemicals, full of pesticides, herbicides, and all the other sides that are all death agents, full of anti-nutrients and anti-vitamins, then what happens is exactly what we see happens. We see incredibly accelerated short careers. We see people who are retiring from sport before they ever should have even reached their peak, while at the same time we see in the athletic world a much higher range of sickness than we do in the mainstream world. We would think that all that fitness activity would give them coverage. We like to think it'll cover. But in the same way that fitness can't make up for sleep, nutrition can't make up for fitness, and on, when people eat that much food that is of a poor quality, this is why we're seeing higher cancer rates among athletes, higher heart disease rates among athletes, higher arthritis rates among athletes, higher chronic fatigue among athletes. We're seeing them just coming down fast. And if you listen to the last Olympics, basically the only thing that was discussed when you were let into the lives of the athletes was the diseases that they had to overcome in order to present at the last Olympics. Nobody talked about other things other than this guy had stress fractures and this guy had digestive disorders and this guy has asthma and allergies and this guy just had open heart surgery and here he is you know, whatever it was. And we're seeing the athletes are actually sicker. They're fitter, but they're sicker.
Right.
So it can work either way. The species-specific diet, though, for any species, we can see the obvious. Big cows eat more than little cows. Active cows eat more than inactive cows. But they all eat the species-specific diet.
Right.
It doesn't really matter with human beings whether we're big or little, active or sedentary. We're designed to consume whole, fresh, ripe, raw, organic fruits and vegetables.
Let's talk a little bit about fitness, because that's one of your major contributions, besides the 80-10-10, but it's actually part of the 80-10-10. Let's why don't you just go into it, and then we'll develop.
The difference between what I do and what everybody else does, which I love, that I have job security because I'm the only one doing what I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's why I gave up a career in chiropractic, because there's lots of chiropractors, but there was nobody doing what I do here. Is that everybody else is teaching about raw foods. I'm teaching about health. My specialty is the area of health. I have focused on health from the beginning. I haven't separated myself from that issue since I was 16, as I mentioned, with all honesty, except for a few sidetracks in college. I did get sidetracked a little. But even then, was still swimming my mile a day and member of the gymnastics team and doing it, but I got sidetracked a little. Fitness is no more important or less important than any other facet of health. If you looked at the marquee at Radio City, it's held up by a bunch of cables. Each one of those cables is equally as important as any of the others. There's no just one critical, even the cornerstone of a building isn't any more important than any of the other stones in the building. Health is the big picture. Raw foods, enough sleep, fresh air, sunshine, emotional poise, positive attitude, water, all of the aspects, the five different elements of fitness, each one. I mean, the strength people will tell you strength is what it's all about, and you're wasting your time to go run. And the runners will tell you running will provide you with well-rounded fitness. And the yoga people say, if you just do yoga, you'll be perfectly fit. And the meditators say, you know, you don't need to do any of that. Just meditate and everything will be fine. And the raw fooders are out there saying, hey, just eat raw food and everything else will be perfect for you. Well, actually, health is the the bigger picture. It's the oversee. And it's the goal, really, I think, because without your health, none of the rest is really all that important. For each individual person, your health is as good as the weakest link. For many of us, it's our diet. For many of us, it's our fitness. Those are the two really biggest ones. There's others. A lot of people just don't get enough sleep, or a lot of people don't get outdoors. They don't get sunshine, or they don't get fresh air, or they're just always in a negative cycle of thought. And definitely what you think about comes about. You create your reality with your thoughts. But I find fitness fun. I mean, when I was a kid, I went out and played. I never went to work. I went out and played. I didn't work out. I got fit by playing. I still don't work out. I go out and play. We went out rock scrambling today, and it was just tremendous fun. And that, to me, has continued to work well in terms of building an ongoing fitness base where I can always do things that are good play. And I find it's a tremendous joy to be able to move. And if I couldn't be active, it would be a major loss in my life, but it would be like losing a family member to me. But fitness activities are not the making of health. They're just one of the underpinnings. They're just one of the support. If we actually made a list of all the things necessary for health, you come up with 32 items. And that list is in my 80-10-10 book. But if there's 32 items, I weight them all equally, to be quite honest. So that means food's worth about 3% of your total health package. And if you're making more of a big deal about it than that, it's because you need to learn some basics and start applying them. And after that, there's nothing to talk about. I remember being at a raw food event back in the 90s, and one of the speakers got up and he says, "I want to make raw food so important that it's the biggest topic of conversation in the world." And got a good round of applause for that, and I can understand. I was next. I said, "I'd like to make raw food so self-obvious that everybody's doing it and nobody's talking about it." There's nothing to talk about. It's like, did you inhale today? Was it air? You know, did you have to flavor your air in order for it to be interesting? No, man, it was good as it was. You know, what did you eat? I mean, like, how many times do you poo? I mean, it's basic. It's too basic. My little girl's 3 years old, you know, and she's already been able to say for a year, in our family, we eat whole, fresh, ripe, or organic fruits and vegetables. It's no big deal. That doesn't require any thought. That's the food we love. We all have sweet tooths. You know, everything about our anatomy and physiology is geared towards eating fruits and vegetables. Yeah. And it's a shame. I think it's a shame people stray, but everybody's got to be on their own path and learn the way they can. Yeah. I personally prefer to take the straight line to where I'm going. I don't like the circuitous path that is ripe with failure and rife with frustration along the way. I don't mind smelling the flowers along the way. I'm not in a rush to get where I'm going. Mm-hmm. But I like the straight line path. If I want to go to a friend's house, I'm going to take the straight line path. If I want to go to the bathroom, I want to take the straight line path. All right? If I want to learn how to eat raw food successfully in a program where I can feel good, maintain the program, keep my health, be happy with every meal, eating food I love that loves me back, I would hate to have to go some long circuitous route where I had to learn something and then unlearn it and then learn something else and then unlearn it and then learn, like, well, this will get you there eventually if you do this for a while and then go do this other thing. And that's where I start to count my blessings, as we were talking about earlier, that I didn't say anything in terms of teaching raw food for the first 10 years. I mean, I'd had my medical degree for 10 years, and I didn't put anything in print still for another 10 years because I wanted to make sure that I knew what I was doing before I actually put anything in print.
Right.
So that my work is congruent with itself, that my lifestyle is congruent with my teachings, all for one reason, strictly so I can look myself in the mirror. Okay, I can look myself in the eye. I can answer the question, would I go to me? Would I apply my program to me if I was that person? You know, and the answer can come up yes, that I can feel good in terms of my own honesty, in terms of my own truth, that I'm living exactly what I'm talking about. Not because I have to, but because I want to. It works better than anything else I've ever tried. I tried a lot of different diets. I grew up in a household that was definitely food crazy and had issues with overweight, and we changed diets often when I was a kid. So changing to become a vegetarian as a college guy really wasn't like some crazy thing out of character. We'd changed diets many times along the years. And my mom was doing Weight Watchers when I hadn't hit my teens yet, so the whole family went on Weight Watchers, and we tried all sorts of stuff.
Right.
So making dietary changes was just an experiment that you try. And I make that promise to anybody today still, that you know, if you try the 80-10 diet approach, eat a diet of whole, fresh, ripe, or organic fruits and vegetables, that if you don't like it, there'll still be other programs to go back to.
So there's a few things I want to talk about. One, I want to talk about specific issues that some raw fooders experience.
Sure.
The other thing I want to talk about is raising your daughter. And let's start with that, because I think that...
You know, the final word isn't in on my daughter. I mean, she's only 3 and a half
right, at this time.
At this point, she's absolutely thriving beyond anybody's wildest dreams. Most of her friends are a year or a year and a half older. It's easy to understand because... You know, when you're 1 year old, the average 1 year old sleeps 16 to 18 hours a day. They're sleeping off their food, where Fechesca was sleeping 12 hours a day. And by the time she was a year old, she'd already experienced as much as the average 1.5 year old in terms of awakeness. Mm. She'd never had a sick day in her life. And so in terms of awakeness, once again, she was experiencing life rather than living hell. By the time she was two, she'd been awake as much as the average three-year-old, and she was functioning on the level of the average three-year-old. We're not rushing her. It's a great thing to have a kid, and we're letting her totally be a kid. We're not trying to force academics on her, but she loves to learn, and we're surprised at her vocabulary, and we're surprised at all the things that she can do. But her health has been excellent. We do have health advisors that we stay in touch with as part of the services that are provided freely in England, and we love that we have that because Francesca is our first child, and if they can add any insight from their experience, it's nice to have somebody to ask questions about. But we fully trust our own parenting skills. We had the freedom and the advantage of both Rosie and I being older parents, so we've experienced more life and done more reading and had the flexibility and desire to do more about having a baby and raising her really well. The health professionals kind of freaked when they said, you know, we're going to breastfeed her. We're going to breastfeed her until she doesn't want to breastfeed anymore, which at that time hasn't come yet.
Right.
But she was one when she started. She was actually 9 months when she really started reaching for food. Okay. We gave it to her. She wanted to play with it. She did not want to eat it. She wanted to play with it. She wanted to find out what it was we were holding that she wasn't. So we gave her a banana. She played with it. She gave it back to us. We gave her some grapes. She played with them. She gave them back to us. When she was one, she started showing more interest in eating the food and began eating food. And she's been eating fruit. She can name all the fruits and vegetables. To her, eating fruits and vegetables is normal. Giving bread to the ducks is normal. She calls bread birdie food. She doesn't even call it bread yet. It's just birdie food. She was a little shocked when she saw people eating bread. We had to explain to her that some people choose to eat differently than the way we choose to eat in our family. And there was no judgment that we were saying, oh, this is, you know, right or wrong. Francesca, different people eat different things. In fact, different animals even eat different things. And it was a really eye-opening day, the day she learned that birdies eat worms.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you know, she thought everything ate fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
And when birdies eat worms, one day it just had to be told to her, you know, birdies eat worms. And she just looked at us when her eyes were like big, and she goes, no. But we were leading our way. We started with birdies and worms and eventually got to cats and mice and eventually
got
to people and cows. And this was kind of a heartbreaking day for her when she started realizing that there's people eating her friends.
Yeah.
She likes playing with those friends. But she's as healthy and happy as can be.
Yeah.
The health advisors are tickled pink. Her growth is normal. Her health is beyond anything they would expect. And you know, we've showed her to various doctors because we stay in touch. I'm traveling a circle of a fair number of doctors myself, and everybody's just commented that they're surprised she's doing so well. What can I say? We're proud of her. And when she gets to the point where she wants to do dietary experiments on her own, we won't be able to stop her.
Yeah.
I mean, nor would I try. She's going to do stuff. And hopefully at that point she'll have been well schooled in the principles of how to take good care of herself, and she'll make the choice whether or not she wishes to take good care of herself. Hopefully, I mean, there's lots of people in the world who've never had a drink. There's lots of people in the world who've never smoked a cigarette, never done a drug, a recreational drug or otherwise. My father went through his entire life and never took any kind of a drug, recreational or medicinal. There are many people in the world who live that kind of a life. And hopefully she'll be one of them, but it's going to be up to her.
Yeah.
We can just instill principles, and hopefully from there it'll go on.
And is the approach letting the diet unfold, or, you know, presenting and then seeing if something is, like, what?
Since she was old enough to talk to us, we've asked her, what does she want?
Right.
And so since about 1.5, she could express pretty well what she wanted. And literally now, 3 meals a day, she tells us what she wants for breakfast. I didn't have that choice when I was a kid. I came down, breakfast was on the table. I came home, dinner was served.
Mm-hmm.
She tells us what she wants for breakfast, what she wants for lunch, what she wants for dinner. If we have it, if we have it and we think it will sit well, because sometimes she puts things together in ways that are just a little bit of a surprise.
Right.
You know, and we go, but if that, we think it'll sit well, we go, yeah, that's, you know, like, like almonds and watermelon probably isn't going to work really well on her tiny sensitive tummy.
Sure.
You know, so we explain that to her, and she's usually pretty accepting of that. But you know, she just tells us what she wants. Today I'd like to have some almonds and apple, please, for lunch. Or today I'd like to have bananas sliced with bananas mashed and bananas poured on top, please. It's one of her favorites.
Right.
But we have all kinds of cookies and cakes and concoctions and things. And she's totally involved in the making of those things with us. She's growing a little garden, and she helps me plant the seeds or plant the plants and water them occasionally. And then when it's harvest time, she picked a carrot the other day and ate the carrot, and you know, she's picked plenty of berries. She knows all about picking berries. Mm-hmm. And so far it's just really the food is not an issue in our home.
Good.
It's no big deal. We just don't put any thought into it. It's so automatic and so easy. We like to make puzzles and do games and run around and play imaginary. She's still very much in her imaginary phase, so most of the day it's imaginary this or that.
Right.
But food's just, it's as easy as it could ever be.
Now, you mentioned that you have people that you go to just check up and make sure that this is going as well as you plan it to. What do you think for anyone, doesn't matter if it's a child or not, do you think that a regimen of testing, some sort of testing, maybe once a year, twice a year, whatever, is appropriate, or is it something that...
My experience with people who eat well is they get much more in touch with themselves than they ever thought humanly possible. They get much more in touch with their emotions. Even guys, they get much more in touch with their feelings. They get much more in touch with what's going on in their body. They get much more in touch with their senses. And in every way, I don't recommend using medical testing as a way of finding out what's going on. But I do recommend realizing that health isn't all about 80-10-10 diet, but it is about an 80-10-10 healthy lifestyle. And so if you are running your 6-minute mile as part of your daily routine, you just go, you know, one of the things I do is every day I go out and I run a 6-minute mile. At the end of my workout or something, I just always finish with a 6-minute mile. And every time I go run that mile, it takes me 6 minutes. You know, but a week ago it took me 6:15. And then 2 days later it took me 6:30. And then the next day it took me 7 minutes, and it felt like I was running a 6-minute pace. And today I did it, it took me 8 minutes, and it felt like a 6-minute pace. Something's up. I wouldn't ignore that indicator. If food stops tasting good, or you start being very tired, or you start being really irritable, or you start, something is up, you start having pains. The difference is I think, the medical model is approaching health from a prophylactic standpoint at this point. In order to promote health care, as it is referred to, even though we understand fully that it is sickness care, in order to promote health care, as they refer to it, they've gone to a prophylactic approach. In other words, let's test you. If you show anything that might maybe think you could be possibly going off in the wrong direction, let's treat it now. And so before you have B12 deficiency, let's take those B12 supplements prophylactically. Before you have a problem with too little salt in your diet, you better supplement with salt. Before you have high blood pressure symptoms, let's treat you for high blood pressure now. Before you have whatever it is, before you have cognitive loss, let's start taking ginkgo or whatever, everything and anything. And this is how the medical model functions. Medical model functions on what I call a 3M approach, or sometimes even a 4M approach, where they're going to monitor, maintain, and manage you with medicine. All right. There is another approach to health that's called the hygiene approach, where we're not trying to treat or suppress symptoms, but rather cause health and not participate in the cause of symptoms. Health being the natural state. If you take good care of a plant, it's going to thrive and it won't show symptoms. if it's showing symptoms. It didn't, something in the substances, forces, influence, or conditions weren't right. It's the same for us. Health is our natural state. If we're not experiencing perfect, ideal, phenomenal, pinnacle health, something in the substances, forces, influences, or conditions is not as it should be. And this is where modifying lifestyle. So where the medical model says substances, forces, influences, and conditions required for health when you're healthy are different than those required when you're sick. When you're sick, take this drug. Even though the drugs will make you sick if you're well, they'll make you well if you're sick, and you're supposed to buy right into that concept. The milk is really good for you when you're well, but if you're sick, it'll make you congested. How does the milk know if you're sick or well? Well, we've carried that in the raw food movement. We've carried that medical model mindset right over, and now we sell all of the supplements and all of the treatment plans and all of the flushes and cleanses and purifying agents, and we think we're doing something different. We're patting our backs for having done something different while we're still actually just monitoring and maintaining and managing our sickness through substances, trying to treat and suppress our symptoms. The hygiene model says substances, forces, influence, and conditions are the same required in health as for regaining our health, but at all times they must be modified to meet the needs of the individuals. So some days you need more sleep than you do other days, but you always need sleep. Some days you need more fitness activities, but you still need it. Some days you need more sunshine than others, but we all need fitness and sunshine and proper foods and enough rest and joy and human touch and enough interaction with other creatures on the planet.
So you mentioned B12, so we might as well talk about that briefly. If someone encounters a B12 deficiency, so they're there, mm-hmm. then what's the approach to get out of it?
There's various approaches. The medical model would be to supplement with B12.
Right.
This is akin to saying, I've got a bucket, it's supposed to be full of water, but there's no water in here. And the medical model would say, well, let's add water. The hygienic model or the health model would say, let's fill the hole. Once you fill the hole, your body will refill the bucket automatically. What I've experienced is people with B12 deficiency who are put on a fast. They consume no food of any kind other than pure water, who 3 to 4 weeks later test perfectly normal for B12 levels. What this showed is that it was an absorption problem, not an exposure problem. B12 is everywhere. It's in the air. It's in the mucous membranes of your nose. Every time you inhale and you're breathing in B12, every time you swallow your own saliva, you're swallowing B12. It's not an exposure issue. There's no animal that produces B12. It's all bacterially produced. And yet, we keep hearing myths. It has been shown that in every diet, there is a certain percentage of people who go B12 deficient. And whether you're vegan, vegetarian, raw fooder, or standard American diet, that percentage is the same. B12 deficiency was first discovered in carnivorous, or what you would call people who ate anything, mm-hmm. you know, kind of a diet. And that's where B12 was first discovered and treated.
Okay, so it wasn't in a vegan?
No, it was not in a vegan in any way. And we're not showing that vegans have higher B12 deficiencies. But we do have to look at the reality that most grain products, especially those that are called enriched grain products, cereals and breads and pastas and whatnot, are typically enriched with B12. So although you might be eating Twinkies, it's enriched with B12, which means you're taking a B12 supplement every day. What we call the normal level for B12 is based on testing people who are supplementing with B12 at every meal. This is an abnormally high level of B12 compared to the normal population, all right, compared to a population which isn't supplementing. Mm-hmm. We also have to understand that there's always a rebound phenomenon for anything in our body, that it's like an oversteering mechanism that says if you're very high on something and then you come off of it, you're going to come down before you level out. And so if you're high on speed, you're going to crash.
Right.
Before you level out. And this is true for all drugs and substances and in every way. So we see that if you were eating enriched B12 products or products enriched with B12 at every meal, that when you totally stop, you may drop down before you level out. B12 testing is not a bad idea, particularly, but I wouldn't test for B12 until someone was showing me B12 deficiency symptoms. Then I would think, well, maybe it's B12. But if the symptoms are other than those of B12 deficiency, supplementing with the number of people, 99 out of 100 people that I've seen who supplemented with B12 told me that it made no difference in their life. Well, then they didn't have a B12 shortage to begin with. Right. They were just supplementing. And when we understand that we live in a world where the scientists and the doctors and the nutritionists agree that 99 point something, they disagree on the point something, but 99 point something of all nutritional disorders in America are those of excess, not insufficiency. The concept of supplementing on top of those excesses is sheer lunacy. Not only are they diseases of excess or conditions of excess, but they are conditions of excess in relation to other nutrients. And so isolating nutrients stops making sense. The only place you're going to get those nutrients in balance is in whole, fresh, ripe, or organic fruits and vegetables. Those have nutrients in proportion to match our nutrient needs. And that's where you're going to get calcium in relation to phosphorus and selenium in relation to zinc and all of the other things that are as they're supposed to be in the body. That's where you're going to get your omega-3s and your omega-6s in balance with each other, rather than saying, well, I just need more of this and then more of this and then more of this and then more of that. Yeah. That can never work. Every nutritional supplement results in more imbalance than it started with or it was tried to overcome. Obviously, if a person is dying from an iron deficiency, or obviously if a person is dying from a B12 deficiency, supplement and save a life. But the solution is in changing or modifying or at least experimenting with a lifestyle alteration that will stop causing the symptoms rather than treating the symptoms. Silly to treat the symptoms and still keep causing them.
When you say, you said America, but that probably can be expanded to most developed countries.
Actually, I rarely refer to the standard American diet. Here in America, I do. But in the rest of the world, when I lecture, I call it the standard Western diet. Yeah. And at this point, anyone who's emulating the standard Western diet, we're seeing, in fact, on the Olympics, they talked about the obesity problem in China. Not from Chinese food. It's from people who have come over to the States, learned how to eat the way Americans do, and then brought that back with them. Or the American companies that have now invaded into China to sell their products in China, and the people who are emulating, even though they're in the East, they're eating the standard Western diet. Yeah. So yes, although we give America credit as being a leader in health decline, it's really not just in America anymore. By far, the Brits used to be 10 years behind us in our health decay, but they're catching up quickly.
Yeah. What would you like to leave someone with here who's listening to this interview? We have about 3 minutes left.
Health is the natural state. If you have sickness, remove the causes. Health is the easiest thing on the planet. Eating fruits and vegetables, the most rewarding food there could ever be. The sense of satiation by itself, let alone the confidence that comes from eating the only two foods that have ever truly been known as health foods and recognized as health foods, fruits and vegetables, that living a healthful lifestyle is a comprehensive picture. It is not just about fitness or just about food, but it is about all of the factors in health. And if you want to actually have comprehensive health, because you're only as good as your weakest link, if you want to have comprehensive health, you have to take care of the weakest links. The rest are ready to go. I think that eating well is so easy and such a gift that people need to actually experiment and find out if, hey, the water's fine here, like I say it is, so that we can start paying attention to the other important issues in life. Paying attention to our food and our fitness is not what's important in life. There's a lot going on in the world that needs help. In order for our children and our children's children to inherit a healthy world, we need to start bringing about peace. We need to start emptying the jails. We need to do a lot in order to create a healthier environment, save the soil, and rebuild this planet back into the Garden of Eden that it once was for our own human experience. I think this is done through taking responsibility, and this is that's where the sticky point really is, because most people are taught that they're not responsible for their own health.
Dr. Graham, I want to thank you for being a part of this program.
Kevin, it's a pleasure. It's really a pleasure to be here. It's fun to reach out to people. I'm coming with a heartfelt message of watching people rebuild their health, regain, maintain, and attain the highest level of health and performance possible. It's a joy to be able to get that message out, and I thank you.
Thanks for listening to this Rockathon interview. There are 14 others that are just as personal and just as powerful, so please go ahead and keep listening. If you're listening to this and haven't purchased the Rockathon archives yet, you can do so at www.rockathon.com. That's www.rawkathon.com. Again, thanks for listening and have an amazing day.